Warning, the following audio transmission is based on theory and is intended for entertainment purposes only. It's Doomsday and its affiliates will not be held liable for anything your dumbass does. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome everybody to It's Doomsday Podcast. Today is January 5th, 2024. Time is 2:06. And joining me, we're still at Hive Life. Joining me here is Marina. Marina, how are you today?
I'm really good.
Really good?
I'm having a great show. Hive Life is it.
And you traveled down from Connecticut, yes?
Yeah, I flew in from Hartford to Knoxville.
Okay. And did we kind of have breakfast this morning? Were you across from the table? Talking about
probably. I mean, I have talked to so many interesting people. You know how conferences are. You just don't know.
Right.
Don't remember 5 minutes ago. But yes.
Yes. So, what are you doing here at Hive Life? What was your draw to come here? What's your mission while you're here?
So, I was invited actually to do a honey tasting class. So today and tomorrow, I am doing these kind of sit down guided honey tastings where we learn how to smell and taste honey and actually put words to what you're tasting. Because commonly, you know, when we taste honey as beekeepers, we just say, oh, this is really good, it's yummy, it's sweet. We don't really have words for it. Like there's words for wine or, you know, olive oil or some kind of other whiskey. You know, there's words like woody and grassy and aromatic. So we're working on doing that kind of a conversation about honey using real words to describe the smells and flavors.
So could you give me an example of any of those? Like what some of these words or flavors or things that you would get out of honey?
Well, there is a tool that is called like a wheel, and okay, it's just like an infographic, and it has like major or sort of broad categories. We call them flavor families. So a honey may fit into a category where we would describe it as being floral, or this honey's very fruity, or this honey's woody, or this one's has a chemical note. We also have a category that we would say maybe this honey is animal or gamey. Certain honeys are funky, you know, so when you're tasting a broad spectrum of honeys from different places around the U.S. or the world, you're going to come into contact with all different kinds of flavors that maybe you normally don't associate with honey, because all honey is not really just sweet.
Okay, that makes sense to me. And the reason why I say that is I've had honey in the U.S. and I've had honey outside of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Honey that I've had outside of the U.S. has a deeper color. It has a more richer taste. A lot of stuff I've had here, it's just this overly sweet. There's no complex flavor profile to it.
Yeah. So if you can get some good quality honey from a beekeeper in the U.S., you will find that deeper complex, that richness of flavor.
Nothing you're going to get from Walmart, right?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, in the U.S. and around the world, more and more, we're seeing incredible amounts of imported inferior honey that's been heated, compromised blend. So you're not getting a pure product. You're getting something that is processed and whatnot. But I want to ask you, so when you talk about the honeys you've had overseas, do you specifically remember what country or?
So the country we go to overseas every year is we go to Greece every year. And that's why I asked before we did the show, like, oh, I heard the conversation.
So yeah,
we go every year. We go to a little tiny village called Niahore, which is right above Stupa. This is about 45 minutes outside of Kalamata, where they do all the olives and the
mm-hmm.
olive oil.
You know.
So the honey that we have there, I can't remember the name of the honey, and it's written in Greek anyway.
Is it thyme?
It's in a blue and white jar.
Okay.
And it's like in a can. It's not like in
a
plastic
put it
or
in a can.
Yeah, it's a can jar.
Mm-hmm.
And that honey, I'll add that to tea, and I'll put it on like cornflakes or whatever while I'm there. And it is the deepest, darkest colored honey I've seen.
Yeah.
It's almost like a golden brown versus gold.
Wow.
And it's extremely thick, and it has a deeper, richer flavor. Is the best way I could describe it.
And, you know, in those countries, especially in the EU and Eastern European countries, they don't use as many chemicals. They don't use as many pesticides. They really are closer to the earth. They take care of the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when people go to France and Paris and, you know, Italy or Greece, they come back, oh, the food was so good.
The food's always so good.
Because they're using pure ingredients. Their laws are a lot tighter on regulating food.
Right.
So here we don't always, you know, you get butter in the diner. It's not always butter. You got to read the ingredients.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that goes in with that too is a lot of things there are just fresher. And they're more locally sourced. If you buy a watermelon here in the States, it might be coming from another country.
Yes.
You buy a watermelon there, it's coming from 5 kilometers down the road that they picked from the farm and are now putting at the stand or putting in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big, huge difference.
It is. It really is. And you taste it.
You know.
And nobody has to be a professional expert taster or cook to know the difference. They just know, oh, I went on a vacation to Greece and the food was amazing.
And it's every year when we go over and we come back, I have a big problem. So my wife and I will come back. And I cannot go to a restaurant for so long here. I cannot touch fast food. I cannot buy. It's like.
And bread, too, especially. The bread is a big deal.
Right. And then there's also the food cost in with this. So eating overseas is a lot cheaper. And a lot of people don't realize that.
They think
you're going overseas and you're going to pay all this extra money. No, we'll go out and feed a family of four way cheaper than you will here. So I tell my wife, I'm like, we're going out, we're spending all this money, and we hate the food.
Exactly.
So we will cook at home for 6 months and refuse to go out.
Yeah. Yeah, so the honey tasting program that I'm teaching here, I studied in Italy. They have a honey program there. They have olive oil. And whenever I go there for the class, or sometimes now I'm teaching, we go out to lunch, you know, during the class, and we have this beautiful hot meal,
mm-hmm.
and it's very affordable. And you can have a delicious meal, and you can buy clothes, you can shop, and everything is just reasonable. You know, it's reasonable. But here,
and better quality.
Better quality. If here you want to buy something really nice that's really good quality, it's exorbitant.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, so whenever I do travel, I do try to buy like a nice pair of shoes or, you know, something that's going to last me a long time, because I can't really justify buying it here. That's been
a big issue I've had lately too, is you go out, you spend all this money on stuff, and it doesn't last like it used to last. And we are now this consumer-based society that
we're disposable society,
right? It's all overpriced, and it doesn't have half its lifespan that it used to 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're basically paying more money for trash.
It's the best way to put it. Yeah. So, it's the same with the honey industry. You know, you go to the stores, you look on the shelf, and if you really read the labels and you really look at the bottle and the back ingredients, you will be shocked to see that 95% of that is imported and heated, it's compromised. You know, and yeah, there is organic honey now in the stores, but people are not paying attention because it's not made in the U.S. They have organic honey. It's coming from Brazil. And it's heated, and it's put in a big metal drum. It's floated over in one of those big container boats. It sits in the dock for, you know, how many weeks? In the hot sun, maybe. It's not temperature controlled. And then that honey gets brought over here, and it's put into a blending station. A lot of times it's heated, so that doesn't crystallize, because consumers generally, even around the world, they perceive honey that crystallizes as inferior. But in fact, it is a sign of quality. So they heat this honey and it doesn't crystallize quickly, because consumers think, oh, I want my honey to be liquid. I want it easy to pour and, you know, spoon. So there's a lot of inferior product in the stores.
Right.
But you got to pay attention. And, you know, we're always in a hurry. Grab it, go shopping, go home. So it really goes across the board in all kinds of food and honey.
So as a honey taster, as in doing this, how long does it take to, like, develop those, I guess, flavor muscles?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I always tell, you know, the students in my classes, you know, nobody is born an expert taster. Mm-hmm. It's something you can definitely cultivate with some formal training and some practice and then experience over time. You definitely see improvement. So everybody's going to start at a different level, but through the class, we do different kinds of exercises like smelling and tasting exercises so that you can sharpen your senses.
Okay.
And then you have to really practice. So I always tell them, you know, go to your garden, pick some herbs, smell them, taste them, try to describe them, go to your spice cabinet and, you know, smell all the spices. Yes, I know you've tasted and smelled cinnamon 1,000 times, but you really need to smell it and start describing it.
Right.
You know, woody, aromatic, you know, you got to describe it. Because that's the hardest thing in the world is to smell or taste a honey and put words to smells.
Right.
And taste. We never do that. We just say, oh, it's good, it's yummy, it's sweet.
So kind of an example of that, and I used to do this all the time. Well, it smells like it would taste like this, right? And coconut is one of those things where it doesn't taste the way it smells, but they scent things that are coconut scented smell like the taste of coconut.
Exactly.
And it's like this backwards kind of thing that we do.
Yeah, you're really perceptive. Yeah, exactly.
So I got to ask about the books. You got your fourth book coming out in September. I want to know what that book's about and the other books you've written beforehand.
So my career as an author started very unexpectedly, like beekeeping. I kind of stumbled upon bees through a neighbor who introduced me to bees. And I started out as an artist. I went to art school in New York. And then when I came back to Connecticut as an adult, I needed something to do. And I met some neighbors. They introduced me to bees. I tasted the honey and I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. It's like nothing I had ever tasted before because I grew up with the little bear.
Right. Yeah. The little plastic bear jar.
Yeah. The little $3 bear that crystallized and we ended up throwing it out. So I was just fascinated, and he kind of pushed me into getting bees. I didn't really know I was ready for that. So I thought, it'll be a hobby. I'll do it on the weekend. If I don't like it, I'll quit. Well, 25 years later, I'm doing bees and doing honey stuff. So my first book is called Honeybee Lessons from an Accidental Beekeeper. And it's kind of my personal story of how I got introduced to bees and what my life was at the time. I was doing some traveling overseas. I was still doing some art design. And I talk a little bit about the beekeeper's calendar, what you do throughout the year, different things I learned. And then I end up with a little bit of honey stuff in the back.
Okay.
So that was my first book. And then my and so I just was contacted by a production company in Canada. They just purchased the film and TV rights to that book.
Oh, really?
Last year. And then everything went on strike. So I don't know. It just kind of sat probably on their desk. I don't know if they're actually like pitching it to a studio or something and screenwriters and all that. I don't know. But they purchased like the rights to the film and TV of the book. So maybe you'll see me in the movies. I don't know.
That would be awesome.
I would be really awesome. Yeah, when I first got the email, I was like, is this spam?
Is this real?
Is this real?
And now I'd be losing sleep at night. Like, man, when am I going to get emailed back? What's going on?
Well, they answered
I'd be so excited.
Quickly. Actually, I think their first email was in my spam.
Oh, wow.
No, she said she had contacted me, and she didn't hear from me for like a couple weeks. I think she contacted my publisher or something. Anyway, we connected, and it you know, we got everything squared away, and I don't know, I'm just waiting to see, you know, where it will go. That is really exciting. That's like a mind-blowing thing that happened, and we'll see. It'd be really exciting if it happened. And then my second book was called The Honey Connoisseur, and basically it is a deep dive into honey tasting, honey plants, different flowers, the flavors of the honey. It's a real beautiful art book. And my co-author of that is Kim Flottam, who was the editor of Beekeeping, Bee Culture magazine for 32 years. And unfortunately, he just passed away. So the book was a beautiful, like it's a coffee table book. And it's going to go into a print, I think, with Northern Bee Books in London. So that may take a little while to bring the book back. It's still available on Amazon. Then my mentor, the gentleman who introduced me to bees in Honeybee, who got me into bees, he became an author, and he invited me to do Honey for Dummies with him. So we did a book about honey, another honey book.
Okay.
For dummies, and there's a lot of recipes and a lot of honey tasting.
I actually own Beekeeping for Dummies.
He wrote that book. That was his first book.
Oh, really? Is it?
Yeah. Okay. His name is Holland Blackiston, and he was the person, my neighbor at the time, who introduced me to bees. And then he became an author. And that book was one of the best-selling books.
Was it really?
Yeah. It's a big seller. So he invited me to do Honey for Dummies.
Okay.
So we did that. That was number three. And I thought I was done. And then I was contacted by a book packager in London to do The World Atlas of Honey, which is an enormous undertaking to
research. It sounds like it. Just the name sounds like it.
All the countries around the world and their honeys. So I spent last year doing most of that, and I still have a chunk of work that still has to be done on it next week, as soon as I get back. And that'll be book number four. Comes out in September. And I think I'm done with books. It's a lot of work. It takes up a lot of time. If you're an author that can just write books and not have to worry about doing other things. Because I have a little honey business, too. I started out with beekeeping. I have a little honey business called Red Bee Honey. And I sell honey, and I sell honey gift boxes. So that's like one business. And then I do a lot of talks and teaching and a book. So if I just got the chance just to write books all day, it would be a lot easier. But I'm kind of juggling too many things.
Oh, no.
Good problems.
Too many irons in the fire, yeah.
Too many honey sticks in the, I don't know. Too many hive tools in the hive.
So I want to ask you some general questions I've been asking everybody that's came through. So first question is, when you started out beekeeping, what was that one mistake that you made that you're still kicking yourself for to this day? You're still like, man, I can't believe I did that.
I made a lot of mistakes. One of the ones that I think is funny is that if you know anything about swarms, like one colony splits into two during the spring usually. And it's basically spreading the species. So one colony becomes two. So one half of the hive, the colony will swarm, land in a tree somewhere until they can find their final destination, which might be in another tree or something. And half of the colony stays. So the queen leaves with that swarm. And the remaining bees make a new queen. They raise a new queen from her eggs. Mm-hmm. So I thought in my head, well, I was able to catch the swarm, and I tried to put it back into the same hive.
Okay.
Now, they already have a new queen.
Oh.
The swarm I got, I was able to get the queen, so I put them back in the same hive, and then they just swarmed again. And I realized later that when you catch a swarm, they should really be hived in a new box. But I made a lot of other mistakes, like, you know, just not managing things on time, not maybe treating on time, or... you know, there's just so many things that you learn along the way, and you make mistakes, but then you learn and you do it better next year. That's how beekeeping is. I'm going to do it better next year.
Right. Well, yeah, every year you get kind of a reset and learn from your mistakes and do better next year. Yeah, that makes sense. So what's, and this is another question I've been asking everybody, what is that one mind-blowing thing you learned about the bees? What is that thing that's like, oh my God, this is amazing that I've learned about the bees?
That's a great question too. So me personally, the simple concept that bees pollinate food and how important they are to food. So I got bees, I got chickens, you know, I have a garden, I grow a lot of my own food. And when I started beekeeping, I started to really research, you know, what am I getting myself into? And yes, I've heard about pollination and all this, but I didn't really know what that meant. I didn't really understand. So I would watch my bees, and I would see them go to the garden, and I would see them go to flowers. And I did a lot of research for my books, and I'm like, bees make it happen. They move the pollen, they fertilize the flower, And there you get a fruit, you get a vegetable, you get a nut, a seed, an herb, mm-hmm. whatever. And my whole life before I got bees, I was told to be afraid of them. Run, swat, they're going to attack you, you know, they're going to sting you.
Jump in the water.
Whatever, you know, lock yourself in the car. So I was told to be afraid of bees, yet honeybees are so gentle. And they're profoundly part of our food. And like I cook, I grow my own food. I'm serious about food. We talked about mm-hmm. that earlier. And I was like, how could the world be so backwards that I live half of my life being afraid of bees and wanting to smash them when
they're
the most
you.
Gentlest. Honeybees are the most gentlest creatures that bring us food, that make good, healthy food for us. Like that was like the mind blow.
We were all very manipulated by the system.
You really have to be your own research and
right.
You know,
it's like living in today's day and age, you have to be a detective. You have to be an investigator and you have to read into everything and go deeper, deeper, deeper until you get the correct answers, mm-hmm. you know, that you need. Because it's,
there's a lot of misinformation out
there. There is, and a lot of it is very harmful to us.
And the scary thing is that most people live on automatic pilot.
Mm-hmm.
They are not looking at the details and making better decisions.
Well, you're blinded by the mortgage. You're blinded by the car note. You're blinded by your work schedule. And you live
rushing.
Your life with these blinders on, and that's how it goes.
And
nobody
rushing.
Really slows down,
mm-hmm.
you know? Kind of like I understand we all have to work, we all have bills, we all have this, but the problem is we put way too much focus on that, and then they put this focus on, well, one day you'll get to retire and it'll all be worth it.
Yeah.
So you want me to work like crazy till I turn, you know, whatever age where I could finally retire comfortably, and then I have all the freedom in the world, but my body's not with it to enjoy it.
Exactly.
You got to be kidding me. This is a scam.
It's a scam. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think some people are waking up to it, that you really do have to be a detective. You do have to read and inform yourself on, you know, your food and, you know, how you take care of yourself. I don't want to say medicine or whatever, but you really have to be your own advocate. And, you know, my parents' generation, you went to the doctor. The doctor said, take this pill and you'll be better. And they blindly said yes.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you have to do the research. What is that pill? Do I really need that? Should I try a holistic natural remedy? You really have to be your own detective.
And I 100% agree with that. I just went through... I cannot stand doctors. I cannot stand Western medicine. It is a big thing that I just cannot stand. I see how much profit they're making off keeping people sick, and mm-hmm. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but it kind of leads me into what I wanted to do next here. So I was the guy on the blood pressure meds in September. I was 30 pounds heavier than I am now, and I was having issues with the blood pressure meds. I was having stomach issues, sucking down Tums all day like they're candy, oh. just feeling like crap, and the doctor's like, well, maybe we could try this med. And I finally ran into somebody that does herbal remedies. And they said, Jester, do you know your blood type? And I said, well, yes, I do. I said, I want you to try a blood type-based diet and see what that does for you. And I said, okay. So I try it. No more Tums, which Tums basically skyrocket your blood pressure and put me on meds that I didn't need, which is why they were causing them to begin with. Like, why I needed the blood pressure meds was because of the Tums. I needed the Tums because of the diet, because no one ever told me, eat different. Do this, do that. So now I'm on this totally different kick. And the doctor's like, new med, reduce the milligram, up this one, try that one. Now I'm on nothing.
Excuse
Bless
me.
You.
Yeah.
I'm on nothing now.
Well, that's great because you took it into your own hands. You did the research and you changed your diet. And nobody tells you that.
Right. And now it's like, you need to come back for a follow-up. And I'm like, why? So I could show you that you guys suck?
Exactly.
With this blood type-based diet, I found myself not getting all the nutrients my body needs because it's very limited to what you can have. So I'm not getting all the omegas like I'd like, because one of the big things with the diet is you're supposed to eat a lot of fish. How often is fresh fish available for you to eat? Yeah. I don't want to eat tuna out of a can all the time. I don't want a Filet-O-Fish from McDonald's. You know, I want real fish caught from the ocean. I don't want something that's been frozen for 6 months either.
Yep.
So it limits it. So I discovered this product and I thought, and you're like the perfect person to try this. So this is Spartan bee bread. Have you ever had this?
Bee bread? Yes, I have.
Have you had this particular
one?
No,
I haven't.
So I want you to try this while we're doing the show.
So that also is something I wanted to bring up, is that
you can read the ingredients.
And bee medicine, pollen, propolis. I use propolis. It has helped me, like, with colds, honey, medicine. So, you know, bees carry into a lot of products. You know, they go from, you know, gardening, growing your own food, to medicine. Bees cover everything.
Right.
Which is amazing. So I'm going to try one.
Yeah, and because you're the honey taster and you're doing this, I'm really like, man, I want your opinion on this.
Is this something you make?
No, I don't make this.
This is something I buy it
and I take it.
I've never seen
three
it.
Times a day.
Where did you get it?
So it's available.
I can't open it.
I can open it for you if you'd like.
Where did you get this?
They sell this online at thestampedenetwork.com. There you go.
Now, we're not doing an endorsement for this, right?
I do have like a code for it and stuff, but I'm not promoting that here. I just want to get people's...
So, bee bread, black currant, mm-hmm. sea buckthorn, apples, and cinnamon.
That's it.
Fresh apples. Is it fresh apples?
I don't know.
bee bread?
Yeah.
Bee bread is supposed to be very good.
Yeah. So, they label this as the superfood.
Mm-hmm. Bee bread is a superfood.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, what better place to get people to taste test this than Hive Life?
It's interesting. I get a lot of the bee bread is fermented. You know, mm-hmm. bee bread is honey, pollen, fermented, and I taste that. So it has a very kind of earthy... I do taste the currants. I do take the apple. It's medicine. Yeah. I don't know what sea buckthorn tastes like. It's like an oil?
I don't know. I've never had sea buckthorn on its own.
I know it's a plant. I don't know what it tastes like. I think I know it more as like kind of an oil or something for the skin. Not bad.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it because I was expecting like way more criticism.
And it's good because I need like a boost of energy.
Right. And that's so I started taking this after about a week and a half. I started having this kind of can't sit still. I need to get up and be moving, not like jittery caffeine energy. And then that leveled off after about 2 weeks. Somewhere into 2 weeks, I started noticing the mental clarity that came with it. I'm picking more correct words when I'm talking. I'm forming sentences better. I'm thinking on my feet quicker. And it's like, you know, coworkers and stuff, I'm more witty. You know, I'm like just quicker on the draw now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because my diet was lacking the omegas.
You know, so this has omegas.
It has a lot of omegas in it.
Bee bread has omegas. Mm-hmm. Is that true? I know it's really good for you, and I know that it's got a lot of benefits. I don't know exactly, but I might take a few.
Yeah.
With me when I leave. I'm going to check it out.
So, yeah, I've fallen in love with that. And, again, I'm not promoting it here, but it's like, man, I want to get all the beekeepers to try this.
Yeah, so, it's interesting.
But so what advice would you have for new people getting into beekeeping? Because I've been asking everybody that question as well.
I would say get a mentor.
Get a mentor.
Because I hear too many stories of people, oh, I bought a box of live bees and I'm trying to figure out how to put them in, and we put them in and they tell you about all the mistakes, and then they go for their first inspection and they don't know what they're looking at. None of us do. And I had a mentor and I joined my local bee club, which was invaluable. Classes, workshops, I can ask all the questions I want. And I think you really need that. It's. I know beekeeping is really glamorized on TV and on social media. Look, I got my bees. And you see the beekeeper with no protective gear. And everybody goes into it thinking, oh, I don't need to protect myself. You know, I can just do it. It's so easy. But in fact, to do it right, you really need to have a lot of knowledge. And you really need to have a lot of time. So I would say find a mentor, find a friend, a neighbor, someone who's experienced, that's willing to work with you when you have a panic, you don't know what's going on, my bees are dying, I don't know what's going on. And join the bee clubs. They have so much good information and they're really willing to share it, and it doesn't really cost very much. So get involved with the community and you'll learn a lot more faster.
That's awesome. Marina, where are you available, like online? Like, are you on social media? Can people like find you to find the book? Like, how, if they were like, man, I want more of her content, how do they find you?
I have a website.
Okay.
I have my own personal website, my author website. It's honeysommelier.com.
Honeysommelier.com.
Honeysommelier. And then I have my educational organization, American Honey Tasting Society.
Okay.
And then I'm on social, and I should do a better job of it. And I have Honey Sommelier on Facebook, Twitter. I'm on Instagram mostly, and it rolls over to Facebook. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm there, but I wish I was better at it.
I think we all do. Well, Marina, thank you for coming on the show. I greatly appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right.
This is an emergency action message. At approximately 1 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, NORA is tracking 15 ICBM nuclear missiles inbound to the following cities: Orlando, Miami, Pittsburgh, Dover, Newark, Richland, Philadelphia, New York City, Baltimore, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Boston, Seattle, Detroit. This is an extremely deadly situation. Stay tuned, the next emergency message will be a presidential address.